You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Have you ever wondered whether you've lived before? Do you have a birthmark and wonder why you have it? Or do you have a really wonderful talent or ability that you never studied in your life, but it just came to you? What do you know about reincarnation? Perhaps you're a skeptic. Paranormal phenomena and spirituality are becoming increasingly significant in our troubled world, and with today's program, whether you're a believer, a skeptic, or just curious, you'll end up knowing a lot more because we're talking with Roy Stimmen about his big book of reincarnation. Welcome to Full Power Living, the only show on international media dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm Eileen Dillon, your creator and host, and we invite you to participate on our chats. We have one on the emotionalpro.com page and also on blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living. Also, you can call us on our toll-free number, 800-630-7858, 800-630-7858. If you're on Blog Talk, you can call the 949 number that's listed there as well. Roy Stimmen has been researching a range of paranormal subjects since his teenage years. He applies scientific analysis to the claims made by people working in the fascinating area of reincarnation, and he's the author of at least 10 books, including One Soul, Many Lives, and writes a widely read blog, which you can find at paranormalreview.com. We're talking today with him about his latest book, The Big Book of Reincarnation. Roy Stimmen, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you, Eileen. Thank you for inviting me.
So, in the Big Book of Reincarnation, your intention is to look at all the aspects of reincarnation and the research that's been done to examine the question of whether reincarnation really occurs or if it's fabricated, perhaps, to bring us comfort. And I think we here in the West are more skeptical, but a belief in reincarnation has persisted through many cultures and most religions, has it not?
It has indeed. It goes back over many thousands of years, and one has to ask where that belief came in the first place. We know that early man buried the dead with different items that would be useful in the afterlife, so a belief in a continuing existence beyond death was apparently very common. But at which point did man start thinking that maybe he would come back, his soul would come back and inhabit another body? The Hindus describe this as part of their teachings, and that goes back more than 2,000 years. The Greeks adopted it. Buddhists also accept reincarnation. In fact, somewhere between a half and possibly two-thirds of the world's population believe in reincarnation, but as you say, it's treated more skeptically in the West, and yet past life regression sessions are quite common. A lot of people have been regressed and apparently recall past lives under regression, and the indications are that the belief in reincarnation has now spread to the West, regardless of one's religious belief. And I think that the statistic is somewhere like 22% of Christians who are asked whether they believe in reincarnation respond positively, even though reincarnation is not part of the Christian teaching. So it's a very interesting development that people are thinking much more about the possibility that we are going to be reborn.
Well, here's a question that I know you address in the Big Book of Reincarnation somewhat, but it comes to me that if something is so, wouldn't it be the same everywhere? I mean, one of the things you elucidate in your book is that different areas of the world have different ideas about reincarnation, about karma, about how long a time goes by between lives. It's not the same everywhere. How do you explain that? How do we reconcile that?
It's difficult to reconcile. I think the answer has to lie with the cultural beliefs, which do seem to shape our experiences after death. So, for example, it's well known that in near-death experiences, in the West, people normally describe that period of passing through a tunnel and seeing a light at the end, and then perhaps meeting dead loved ones, and then being told that it's not their time to die, and they have to come back, and that's what their memories consist of. But in the East, the Far East, in Japan, for example, the reports of near-death experiences are of people tending gardens. There are these differences, and culture seems to be a part of it. And similarly, with the cases of reincarnation where individuals claim to remember the period between lives, so after they died in their past life but before they have been reborn, they describe very different experiences. Some talk about meeting Jesus, for example. If we're talking about somebody that has died in India or Pakistan or somewhere, they may describe meeting Buddha or some holy man of some sort. So these descriptions differ widely, and this is something that needs to be tackled by people to try to get to grips with why this happens. I don't have an easy answer, but there are clearly important cultural influences on what we experience when we pass from this life to the next.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the sort of explanations I was willing to accept is here on the Earth we have just the idea of going to the Olympics and having gymnastics. We may have differing ideas of what gymnastics are, but we still call them gymnastics. So the fact is that we have a range of things in categories, and maybe that happens here too. Of course, I agree that we don't have the information. Now, one of the most outstanding reincarnation situations that most people seem to accept is that of the Dalai Lama. Could you tell us a little bit, you've done some work on this, how is the Dalai Lama selected and how that relates to reincarnation?
Sure. Well, it's not just the Dalai Lama. There are a number of important lamas within Tibetan Buddhism in particular, where once the Lama dies, or even before he dies, sometimes he will predict where he will be reborn. And if he doesn't do that, then there are certain signs that his followers get in as to the direction in which he will be found. And so after a couple of years after the death, by the time he would have been reborn and be a developing child, but still of a very young age, then they go off and search for him. And they often use mediums or oracles to give them signs and clues as to where to go and look. When a search party does that, they often identify 3, 4, 5 possible candidates as the reborn Lama, and they then put those individuals to the test. So although Buddhist teachings tell us reincarnation is a fact and it happens to everybody, it doesn't stop them needing to apply scientific principles in determining who is the correct reborn Lama. And what they normally do, the search party will take belongings from the Lama in his past life and will at some point introduce them to a child that they'll be talking to, or the parents of the child, and wait to see what reaction that child has. So in the case of the present Dalai Lama, and we're going back 70-odd years when this happened, the search party turned up. One of the members of the search party was actually somebody who was very closely involved in guiding and teaching the previous Dalai Lama, and he dressed up in very simple clothes. He took off the whatever adornments he would have in his that indicated his office, if you like. And so he turned up at a family's house. They were all greeted, and they went in. And the little Dalai Lama, as we now know him, when he saw this man, he immediately called him by or recognized him and showed his recognition and indicated he knew exactly who he was. And when they produced different items, he was able to identify those that belonged to himself in his previous incarnation. They were his own belongings, and he discarded things that had been put there deliberately to test whether he could easily see things. So that's how they identify a lama. Obviously, the child quite frequently talks about his memories to his family as well. And in the case of the present Dalai Lama, he says that he did have memories of his past life as a child, and when he was taken to the Holy Palace with the search party after he'd been identified, he was able to find his false teeth in his past life that were hidden in a box, and nobody knew where they were, but he was able to go to them and find them. So those are the sort of proofs that are looked for and found in the cases of reincarnated lamas.
Wow. Well, as you so well describe over and over again in your book, you don't have to be a person of high spiritual order in order to do this. There are a number of children that you report on who can tell you where there's a hidden chamber, or tell you that I think there was a situation where someone's former husband, the husband from the former life, claimed to be the brother, and the child said, no, this is my husband. So you don't have to be of high spiritual order. Bringing up this business about children, there are lots of ways to determine whether a person believes that they've lived previously, like hypnotic regression as well, but the most striking and researchable situations are those with young children who seem to remember for a few years and then those memories fade. And I want to ask you about, I don't know how you say his name, Aiz, A-I-Z, from Lebanon, that you talk about in your book. Tell us a little bit about his story and how some of this works.
Sure. I pronounce his name Aiz as well, so we're either both wrong or we're both right.
Thank you.
This is an incredible story, I have to say. It's one of my favorites because it does demonstrate very well how spontaneous these cases are and how they occur and how impressive the evidence is when you examine it. Aiz was a little boy who was born in northern Israel in a village called Usfeya, and he was in the Druze community. Now, we can talk a little later about the Druze community, but basically they are an offshoot of Islam, but unlike Islam, they are taught reincarnation. In fact, it's the cornerstone of their religion. And there are communities of Druze living in Israel, Syria, and Lebanon, although some have emigrated around the world. There are quite a few in America now, for example, and some in the UK, I'm sure. But they tend to stay in communities, and they all accept reincarnation. And from my visits to Lebanon to make a TV documentary, I discovered that it's almost impossible to talk to anyone within the Jewish community without them telling you that either their brother, their sister, their aunt, their uncle has memories of a past life, etc. It's all accepted as very natural and quite a frequent occurrence as well. So coming back to Ayizi's story, he was this little boy in Usfaya, northern Israel, and he had told his parents, once he was old enough to speak, that in his past life he had been a truck driver, and his name was Ali Badawi. They listened sympathetically to that. They had no way of checking whether he was right or wrong. They probably accepted it was true, being a Druze, but it didn't have any significance to them. Until one day he was in the street and he saw a woman who he ran up to and said, "You're Nabiya, my wife." Now, this lady did not live in Israel. She lived in Lebanon, but she was on a visit to this particular place. And I think it was the first time she'd visited there. So she was taken aback, but certainly he'd got her name right, which was puzzling. And so she spoke to him. And when he said he was Ali Badawi, that was her husband's name. And he had been murdered. He was a lorry driver. He'd been murdered and robbed near Baalbek in Lebanon a few years earlier. So who wouldn't be impressed by that? And Nabiya went back with the little boy to his house and spoke to his parents, and she kept in touch with him. And when he reached the age of 13, she invited him and his family to Lebanon, and he went back to there. He met his daughter. Well, in fact, when he arrived at the house, he stood on the doorstep and called to his daughter, Lena. And she was there, and she came and greeted him. And then he went inside, and he looked, and he saw his clothes that he'd worn, because his widow had kept all the clothes that he'd had and hadn't touched them since the moment he'd died. Wow. And he was able to describe what was in the pockets, and everything tallied exactly. And so as a result of that, the two families became good friends, and Ayiz regularly visited Lebanon to see his past life family. And when Lena, his daughter from his past life, got married, it was Ayiz, who was, of course, much younger than her, but he gave her away.
Oh, wow.
Because that was the tradition. Because as far as everybody was concerned, he was her father, and he was giving her away at the wedding. So a beautiful story, a truthful, factual story that I think is as good as any movie script you might find from Hollywood. I mean, but it's these are the sort of stories that reincarnation bring up.
You know, from my experience, my personal experience, this kind of information, what I teach people is that what you pay attention to, you tend to become. And in the Druze community, they're paying attention to reincarnation, so of course they'll have more of it evident. But as I began to look at, be more open to reincarnation, I had what seemed one day to be something like a fantasy to me of two young men who were tossing cabbages back and forth and having fun in an open-air market. And the fantasy continued. The two of them ended up on opposite sides of a war. And from my perspective, I worked in the headquarters, and I knew they were taking this other young man, who was my dearest friend, off to be tortured. And they took him down by a river, and I couldn't get there. I could hear him yelling, but I couldn't get there before they killed him. And I had this idea that this young man was my son. And my son was about 17, 18 years old at that time. And I told him, I said, I had this idea. I didn't tell him much. I said, I had this idea, I think it may have been past life, of you and me being good friends and being in the market, and you unfortunately were killed. And he said, "Why didn't you come and get me? I was waiting for you. You were supposed to save me." It was so fast, and I wouldn't have thought it was there, you know, but he mm-hmm. responded so quickly to it.
Mm. he'd already been aware of that, but hadn't discussed it with you, presumably.
I don't know if he, you know, I did ask him, did you remember it? And he said, well, not until you mentioned it. But it was right there when it was mentioned.
Yep.
So that was very interesting, because I wasn't sure if it was real or not. But boy, after his response, I thought, well, there must be something to this. Well, we're up to our first break here, Roy. We're talking with Roy Stemmen, who's author of over 10 books on a variety of paranormal subjects, including the one we're discussing today, The Big Book of Reincarnation. And Roy is going to tell us a story of a doctor who treated someone during two different lifetimes that they were living. When we return, you're listening to Full Power Living.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
As a parent, have you found all the parenting information you've been hearing lately a bit confusing? Are you having trouble sorting out the best response to your defiant child, or feeling hopeless about regaining respect from your teen, or determining whether your actions as a parent are the right ones? Instead of the usual pressures of parenting that you've been experiencing, you can partner with your child, raising incredible kids who are destined to become amazing adults. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, giving you the opportunity to become the incredible parent for incredible kids. We have the method and the tools. You bring your optimism for learning and the kids. Raise Incredible Kids offers a comprehensive system for raising kids who are responsible, make their own great decisions, and become immune to peer pressure. To get you ready for this new era in parenting, get my free 10-page report, Incredible Communication That Helps You Create Incredible Kids, by visiting RaiseIncredibleKids.com now. That's RaiseIncredibleKids.com. Welcome back to Full Power Living. Please listen to these announcements. Upcoming guests are listed at the top of our radio show page on emotionalpro.com. Next week, Feng Shui Master Linda Lenore is my guest, talking about Feng Shui as a tool for life and success. We'll be talking about the concept of aging in place and how to go green with Feng Shui. So listen. You can listen to us on Blog Talk Radio, EmotionalPro.com, or subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes. And we want to thank you for listening and for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the mastery and power of human emotions. Remember, our toll-free number is 800-630-7858. We're talking today with Roy Stemmen, who's author of The Big Book of Reincarnation. And Roy, you've also written Spirit Communication, One Soul, Many Lives, and Healers and Healing. What got you interested in this area starting when you were a teen?
It began, strangely enough, with an interest in UFOs, which I had as a teenage boy, and a lot of teenagers did in those years. And I happened to come across a newspaper called Psychic News, a spiritualist newspaper, which at that time covered UFO reports, or at least claims relating to contacts with UFOs. So I bought the paper because I found it very interesting, and that introduced me to spiritualism. At the same time, I was following Air Chief Marshal Lord Dowding, who was the Battle of Britain's leader during the Second World War, and discovered that he had written several books on his communications through mediums with dead soldiers and airmen, and he'd passed these messages on to the loved ones that they were trying to communicate with. So I sort of became very interested in the whole question of life after death and the possibility of communicating with that other dimension. And that continues to be an interest of mine. But one aspect of that, of course, is that perhaps we don't all pass on and go to another world, to heaven or wherever we, whatever we call it, but some of us may need to return and reincarnate here and live another life. And I make the point in the book that I think the evidence for reincarnation is very strong, but I'm not saying that it necessarily happens to everybody. There has to be a purpose, I suspect. And one of the things that came out of my early research into reincarnation was that violence in a past life seems to be a very big feature of cases of people remembering their past lives. In fact, the statistic is that 50% of all cases of people remembering past lives, they recall the violent end to a past life. And that raises the question, have they had to be reborn because that violent end cut their previous life short and they didn't live it to the full, so they need to come back and have another life? Or is it just that they are remembering the past life so strongly because that violent death was a traumatic event that sort of engraved on their memory and it's passed into this life with them, and so they remember it, whereas the majority of us do not remember our past lives? So lots of questions to ask, and I try to deal with some of them in the big book of reincarnation, but I make it clear that we're still a long way from fully understanding the mechanics of reincarnation or how frequently it may occur, whether we all reincarnate or whether it's just a small minority.
Well, you know, regarding that question, yes, you do a really great job of covering a lot of things in the Big Book of Reincarnation. But regarding that question about reincarnating because of violence, since I have been working with emotions for many years, what I also see in this lifetime is that any experience we have that has high emotion attached to it stays with us longer, is more powerful, has more learning for us attached to it. And that stands to reason that that would be similar if indeed reincarnation is for real.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so, that makes sense.
Yeah. So I've found that reincarnation is scary for a lot of people. It scared me for years. And I think one of the reasons it did is because I had karma connected to reincarnation, and I was concerned that there were things I must have done in previous lifetimes for which I had to atone, and I felt overwhelmed enough with this lifetime. And I was relieved to read that different people have different ideas about karma, and it's not only just about being punished for past transgressions.
Well, I'm very cautious about discussing karma because I don't think any of us are in a position to really judge other people's karma. We can perhaps judge our own, maybe. But karma makes sense to me in that I think life has to have a purpose, and if we are reborn and we keep coming back to have different lives, it must be in order to overcome problems and to improve ourselves spiritually. And that can only be done if there's some sort of balancing act between good and evil or whatever, however we see it. But I find that the people that go out on a limb and say that people with disabilities, for example, must have done dreadful things in a past life, are really not in a position to make that judgment. Who are they to say why that person has disabilities? Maybe they have chosen to come back with disabilities as part of their learning experience.
Yes.
But maybe some have been punished. I give examples in the book of some famous cases of people who made those sort of comments and got into deep water for doing so. And in a way, you go around in circles. For example, Lord Dowding, who I mentioned earlier, claimed that the victims, if I remember it correctly, the victims of the Holocaust were, in fact, the people who were in the Spanish Inquisition and had wreaked havoc on other people. So they were getting justice, if you like. But you can say, well, what about the people that were before that? There had to be a beginning for this violence, and you can't keep claiming it goes on from one period to another. And it just doesn't make sense to me. Karma makes sense, but deciding who and why karma is, how it's working, I think has to be somebody else's judgment, and that's got to be a divine entity, I guess.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. May I share briefly a story with you from my own life that may that speaks to this? When I turned age 40, I had a very severe problem with my back, and I had x-rays taken, and the chiropractor I was consulting told me, you're just going to have a problem with your back for the rest of your life. Well, I was 40, and I expected to live at least another 50 years, so that was very unacceptable to me. And I knew John Fox, who is a channel. He channels Hilarion. And I sought him out for help, and he told me the most amazing story. It was about how I had been in service to a prince in a previous lifetime and had beaten people with a whip for fear of losing my own life. And over time, he told me, I became angrier and angrier and broke somebody's back, and that I'd never forgiven myself for that. And he gave me some things to do to correct the situation. He also told me that my sister, the dancer, was the person that I had hurt, and that she and I had incarnated twice since that, then, together. And the bottom line, to cut to the chase, the way this worked for me, now, I suppose people could say, well, the back problem was a punishment, but the way it worked for me when I learned about this was that I did a visualization and suddenly realized why I'd been angry with my father for being what I thought was a wuss. I was able to improve my relationship with my sister, and eventually I also identified that my son was the reincarnated prince. He started lighting kerosene and matches and candles at my dining room table, sneaking them around and nearly burning our house down. And when I started paddling him, it felt so bad, I began investigating. And I discovered this incredible situation where a person that I must have hated in another lifetime it was the person I was supporting and loving and helping to start out in life. And altogether, it was a huge healing for me in many ways. And so I perceived this as a learning opportunity, not as a punishment.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's a very interesting story because, as you know, I've written a couple of chapters in the book relating to group reincarnation and keeping it in the family. There's a lot of reincarnation cases which indicate that people are born in groups, if you like, or in family groups. But also under hypnosis, it's remarkable how many people do suddenly identify people in this life as being individuals that they shared past lives with. So there does seem to be that link that carries over many, many incarnations. Now, I'm quite skeptical about past life regression in terms of it providing evidence of reincarnation, hard scientific evidence, but I'm very much in favor of it as a healing tool. I think past life therapy is one of the, as I understand it, I'm not a practitioner, but I understand that it is one of the quickest and easiest ways of getting to the root of some people's problems where other forms of therapy have been to no avail. And whether what an individual recalls under hypnosis during those sessions is really an accurate account of a past life, or whether it's something that they are dramatizing to make sense of problems in their life is an open question. Some therapists interpret it one way, some therapists interpret the other. But from your own experience, you'll know that sometimes when you have that insight into those relationships, that it is tremendously healing.
Yeah, it was wonderful, and I know you have a whole chapter on phobias that are healed in that way, that especially phobias that don't seem to be able to be touched by other means. I found that chapter very very fascinating. Well, we didn't have time yet in this segment to hear about Dr. Abu Asi treating the young woman Dada in two different lives, but that's what I'd like you to talk about when we come back. Roy Stimmen is our guest today. Thank you. We're talking about reincarnation. Roy is also involved with Psychic News, Alpha, Prediction, and Life and Soul magazine. Listen to these messages, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Do you know that emotionally, children form the foundation for their life during their first 7 years? Most adults just repeat that early emotional learning, good or bad, over and over for the rest of their lives. If you want to give your child an opportunity to live an emotionally masterful life, then join me, Eileen Dillon, also known as the Emotional Pro, for a free one-hour teleseminar on what it takes for your child to become an emotional master. You'll discover important things like what emotions are designed to do for us, four things it's vital for parents to tell their children about emotions, and the single most important thing to do when someone is feeling emotion. Register now at RaiseIncredibleKids.com. The time has come for us to allow emotions their rightful place in our lives as the tools and helpers they're created to be. Find out what you need to know in order to give this vital information to your children so they can live emotionally masterful lives. Go now to RaiseIncredibleKids.com for your free Emotional Mastery Teleseminar. Researcher of the paranormal, Roy Stimmen, is our guest today here on Full Power Living, and we're talking about the big book of reincarnation. So, Roy, tell us the story of Dr. Abdel Abu Asi treating this young woman, Dada, because that's very fascinating and not something that I'd ever heard of before. And it brings up the whole issue of whether you could encounter the same person living their two different lives.
I should explain that I came to meet Dr. Abu Asi in Lebanon when I was making the TV documentary I mentioned earlier, and I visited his surgery. He's a general practitioner in a Druze village, and he is a Druze. He accepts reincarnation. And it was interesting because I asked him whether being a Druze and having his beliefs helped him in any way in helping people medically, and he said certainly. In fact, he said often parents will bring their a child to me and they'll say that he's always crying. We can't find out what's wrong with him. Can you examine him and see what's wrong? And he said, having examined the child, I find there's absolutely nothing wrong. However, I do then consider that maybe the child is troubled in some way by a past life experience that he or she still has a memory of. And he said that in many of the cases that he's dealt with, by encouraging the child to talk about what the problem is, but once the child is at an age where they can talk, a violent death is often discussed. And I should say that Professor Ian Stevenson, who was a researcher at the University of Virginia for many, many years, and was the doyen of reincarnation researchers, he did a statistical analysis of his own cases and found that 50% of all the cases featured violence. So Dr. Abu-Azi had an insight into that and was able to help families and their children in a way that Western doctors, I'm afraid, wouldn't be able to, because their mind would be probably closed to the fact that a past life memory was coming through. But the story that you ask about is the run of Dada. I said to him he'd been a general practitioner for about 30 years, and I asked him whether by any chance that he had a patient or patients in that were currently consulting him that he had also treated in a past life. And he said, as a matter of fact, I do. I have a little girl from the village of Alay, and she could remember. He wouldn't give me the name of the child for ethical reasons in this life, because she hadn't given permission. But in her past life, her name was Dada. And this little girl had apparently been reborn and had memories of a life before where she had accidentally been shot whilst she was picnicking with her family. A hunter was hunting goats, apparently, and shot, and somehow the bullet hit Dada. Now, she was rushed to hospital in Beirut, and while they were putting the intravenous line of into her arm to try to help her recover, she died. Now, in her new life, she said to her parents one day that they said they needed to take her to a doctor. She had a problem of some sort. And normally she doesn't, she didn't like seeing doctors. But when they mentioned Dr. Abu-Azi, she said, I want to see that doctor. And they said, but you're afraid of doctors. Last week we took you to another doctor and you screamed. And she replied, this doctor I want to meet. So I think she was 11 years old at the time. So they took her to see Dr. Abu-Azi. And when she arrived, she said to the doctor, Doctor, I know you. You used to treat me for this. And with that, she pointed at a part of her, I think it was her throat, that she could remember being affected. And so the doctors began asking questions about her past life so he could identify her. And I think she gave the name Dada. Then she'd certainly given it to her family. And sure enough, he went and got her medical records from her past life. And it was, she used to have sore throats in that past life, exactly as this little girl now remembered in this life. And he said, you used to have sore throats, do you remember? And she said, no, I don't remember. But she said, I do remember I am Dada. And, you know, the evidence, he then produced the medical records and told the family more about that, his previous patient. And she now is a regular patient of his. And she's very happy that she said, I'm very happy that I've had you as my doctor in both lives. So it's a nice story, I must say.
Yes, it's very sweet. And something that I think most Westerners wouldn't, we find fantastical, whereas, as you're saying, in a community, say, of Druze, where reincarnation is accepted, that you might hear more than one story like that. So I find that really fascinating. there's so many other fascinating topics in your book, Roy, that we are not going to have time, but I'd like to just mention some of them. You investigate whether people can have memories of future lives, about reports of what is between lives, the life between lives. You have a chapter on celebrities, including Prince Charles, which fascinated me, who have learned of past lives or are open to reincarnation. And the whole issue of having been famous in a past life, I think for so long when I knew about past lives, I thought it was kind of fluffy because people always seem to be a king or a duke or a princess or something, and no ordinary people. And I note that on your blog recently, you report there are more and more people claiming to be the reincarnation of Marilyn Monroe. What do you think is the most important thing for us to be aware of regarding reincarnation right now? What would be the most helpful thing or the most important thing for us?
Well, I think what these cases tell us, and the most important thing, is that we are immortal, that we live beyond death. Now, I suspect that the majority of your listeners will already have that view, but maybe not all of them. But reincarnation, I mean, there are mediums providing spirit communication, and there are other ways of getting evidence of an afterlife, but science generally poo-poos all of that and says it's nonsense. My view is that reincarnation cases, particularly those involving birthmarks and birth defects, which I deal with at some length in the book, provide a level of physical evidence in addition to memories, which is very difficult for skeptics to dismiss. And so I think possibly reincarnation holds out the promise of providing ultimately the best proof that life, that we are all spirit and that we survive death and go on to live in some existence, either in another dimension or we return to take on new bodies that give us new opportunities to learn experiences. And that, to me, is that's the most important aspect, I think. We each then have to make up our own minds about the implications of that information, but I think reincarnation is going a long way towards providing the sort of evidence that science demands. And the birthmarks I mentioned is quite fascinating because I've mentioned violence appearing in many of the cases, 50% of the cases, and as far as birthmarks is concerned, the statistic is about 35%, and those birthmarks coincide with incidents of violence. So in fact, if a person remembers a life where they were shot through the head and died, they are born with small marks on the head, birthmarks which coincide with the entry and exit point of a bullet that dispatched them in that past life. And some of the birthmarks are quite incredible, very unusual ones relating to children being born with half a leg, for example, and remembering a life in which they were run over by a train. Not only remembering that, but remembering the name of who they were in that life and the village and the names of their parents and everything else. So when you begin to analyze all that evidence, it is quite remarkable. So to me, and the reason I've put this book together is because a lot of this material was available in parapsychological journals and science journals and medical journals as well, has covered some of these subjects. But I felt there was a need to try and open it up and give it to a wider audience to make people aware of just how strong the evidence is.
Yes, and you've certainly done a great job of that. Speaking of revealing things, I just wanted to share with you, you have in your appendix, you list the researchers and psychologists who've been working or have worked on reincarnation. And in the late 70s, I used to be a member of the Spiritualist Church in California, and I had been utilizing spiritual principles in my work as a psychotherapist for several years, but I hadn't come out of the closet because I thought people would view me as a quack. And I finally decided I got strong enough to declare myself to the world, and the way that I chose to do it was to invite Dr. Helen Wambach to come and do a reincarnation workshop at my office. And it was quite fascinating. I decided I'm going to jump in with all 4 feet as long as I'm going to let people know I'm interested in the spiritual and the paranormal. I'll do it with reincarnation right out front. And she was really quite good. And I note that you mention her in your book and also have her listed.
I never met her, but I gather she was a larger-than-life lady and quite a personality.
She was. Both of those things. Yes, she was.
Yes.
There's just so much. It's really fascinating to go through this. I personally never would have thought that I'd have anything to do with reincarnation, and yet that side of life has opened up, and I find it has helped me, and I'm certainly hoping that some of our listeners will open up to it and find similar kinds of help. So, Roy, I just want to thank you, remind people that you're at paranormalreview.com, and you know, you obviously have stuck your neck out far during your life looking at topics that a lot of people try to hide or ignore, and your careful work that documents what we do know about reincarnation I find really helpful. So thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you for the comment. And I would say that, of course, if reincarnation is a fact, then we'll all come back, then we're going to inherit the world that we're creating now. So it's important that people do consider that.
That is a very poignant point, yes. All right, so what we're creating today, we're likely to have for ourselves tomorrow when we come back. Is this what you want? That's very, very powerful. All right, thank you for being our guest today on Full Power Living, and let us know when you complete your next book. No doubt you will, I'd love to talk with you again.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Join us live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern Time, for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. And remember, next week we have Master Feng Shui expert Linda Lenore discussing Feng Shui for life and success. Until then, you can sign up to listen to our archives at emotionalpro.com. And don't forget, I'm participating in the Emotional Intelligence Telesummit that's starting up September 3rd. I'm going to be giving away 3 hours of personal or parenting coaching to a lucky winner, and I'll be presenting a workshop on what it takes to parent emotionally literate children. So go to emotionalpro.com for more information on this event and for directions about how to register. Robin and Paul Johnson, Fresh Talk Media, our producers. Thank you, Paul and Robin, for your work today. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon reminding you, pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.